This is a recording of the open meeting of the Federal Election Commission held on January the 14th, 2016. Should you have questions after listening to the recording, please call the FEC at 1-800-424-9530 or email us at info@fec.gov.
Steen is in session. The first agenda item is the correction and approval of minutes. Mr. Vice Chairman, we have a motion.
Mr. Vice Chairman, I move to suspend the rules on the timely submission of agenda documents in order to consider the late submission of the following documents. Agenda document 15-69-E, draft C, Hillary for America AO. Agenda document 16-03-A, draft A, we support that AO.
All right. We'll move the late submitted documents first. All those in favor say aye.
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 Madam Secretary, the motion passes by a vote of 6-0. Do we also have a motion on the minutes for the meeting on, I guess, the meetings of November 10th and 17th, 2015?
Mr. Chairman, I move that the Commission approve the minutes of the open meeting of November 10th and 17th, 2015, as set forth in Agenda Document 16-01-A.
All right. We have a motion on the table. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Madam Secretary, the motion passes by a vote of 6-0. Since we are meeting together as a commission for the first time in 2016, I first of all just wanted to wish everyone a happy new year and hope that your holiday season went wonderfully and that 2016 has treated you well thus far. As we all know, we have a presidential election cycle that is well underway and that will obviously consume a lot of our time and attention over the course of this year, which will present many challenges, but also will present many opportunities. We know from experience that there's always an uptick in the number of advisory opinion requests that are submitted and the number of complaints that are filed. And so we will definitely need to be on our A game this year in order to make sure that we are providing the timely resolution of these submissions and of these complaints. For example, in the enforcement matter, in the enforcement arena, in order to provide closure to those who are the subject of enforcement matters, and also to provide clarity to the larger community who are subject to our laws and regulations. This has been an issue that we've discussed at some length in these meetings, and I just want to reaffirm my commitment to working effectively and efficiently with the docket of items that we are going to be faced with. You know, very oftentimes the commission is perhaps criticized, or it is noted the disagreements and the differences of opinion that we have on the commission. And I don't pretend to say that we don't have our disagreements. And sometimes but I believe that they are based on principled views of the law and are held in good faith. But having been here for 7.5 years, I also know that we're capable of working together to find common ground and compromise solutions. And I certainly want to, throughout this year, identify those areas and issues where we can work together, because I think that we definitely are at our best when we can find areas where we can find, you know, as especially all six of us, but at least majorities of us, to move forward on particular matters. And I hope that we can find agreement wherever possible, and that where we can't, that we'll still disagree respectfully. I look forward to working with Vice Chairman Steve Walther. We've worked together before. He was the chairman, and I was his vice chairman back in 2009. And I've always enjoyed the professional and cordial relationship that we've shared. And I look forward to continuing that through the upcoming year. And we've had many opportunities to talk so far this year. And I think both of us feel optimistic about what we can accomplish this upcoming year. And I also want to thank the staff and look forward to working with all of you. I recognize both what you do when the lights and cameras are on, but also, more importantly, all the efforts and yeoman-like work that you put in behind the scenes. I know that I greatly appreciate and rely extensively on the fine work that that our staff throughout this building put in on a daily basis, and look forward to continuing that working relationship. So in short, I'm looking forward to working with my colleagues this year to hopefully make this as productive and effective as a year as possible. And again, happy 2016 to all of you, and let's make it a good one. So, Vice Chairman.
Thank you, Matt. Also, Happy New Year to everyone in your personal lives as well as on this within this building. And each year brings a new hope and a refreshed approach to things, and I think we can do that this year and hopefully begin to find new ways of finding a common ground. I sent a note to the commission a couple days ago because I realized I just had my 10th anniversary here. But in the process, it made me realize how many people here have been here 30 years. And I know that there's some of those people that retired in the last year or so, but we have an awful lot of people who've given their lives to this place. And then I'm also of the same realization right now that we have been voted to be a very unpopular place to work. I think if we're not the very lowest, we're close to the lowest in the other government agencies. But I tend to think that not has always been the case, and there hasn't been votes taken like that, you know, a long time ago. But given the fact that people love this place and given their lives to this place, is telling about where we should be today. And I want to reiterate what I said in my note, that I think the staff is terrific. They're dedicated. They show up. They have a smile going up and down the elevator when you don't get the chance to know these people very well as you'd like. And I know all of us on the commission recognize that even in our darkest hours. But something has changed to the point where we need to take a look at how we're getting the job done for the staff. And there is an opportunity now to help us do that. As you all know, there is an opportunity now with professionally hired people to help us find the root causes of some of the problems that seem to have surfaced, especially when you vote on how you perceive this workplace. But it's up to the staff to help us do this. And you can go down to room 208 between 10 and 2 almost every day of the week for the next month or so. And when you get down there, you also see some telephone numbers you can use to call if you want to meet offline, meet in another place. You know, it's totally anonymous. But I really encourage the staff to do that and to give your measure of support to the FEC by helping us work our way out to a place where it's an enjoyable place for everybody to live and work. Having said all that, I want to say I'm really pleased to be able to work with Matt. He's a great gentleman. It's always been a pleasure to work with him, even under the times when we disagree as strongly as we can disagree on some points. And, you know, we've had some meetings already about how we can, with some baby steps, get started and begin to develop a constructive relationship that will carry us through the rest of the year. So, you know, Matt, you've got my pledge to work with you as cooperatively as it can possibly be to move the ball forward. And thanks.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Vice Chairman. Commissioner Rabbit.
Thank you. I've asked to speak because, as many of you know, Sarah Rosensky is leaving the agency. And she has worked with me as well as other commissioners. She's worked with me since I arrived, and in fact, she worked with me before I arrived, and has provided incredibly good counsel and advice. And I think her leaving is particularly significant because she's a loss not just to me, but to the entire agency. I mean, she has a wealth of knowledge about the workings of the agency. She understands and remembers off the top of her head the findings and issues in past AOs and enforcement matters. And she and I have had many, many long discussions about, that were scintillating, I might add, about footnotes in prior AOs and enforcement cases. But actually, we've had a lot of discussions about issues and very spirited disagreements and I've always valued her advice and counsel. She is a fabulous lawyer. She's knowledgeable, hardworking, really hardworking, tenacious, cooperative with everyone here. And, you know, most of all, she's a really genuinely good person, and I'm very sad to see her go. Sorry to tear up. You know, she's just been quite amazing. So, but we wish her well. She's going to Planned Parenthood, and she'll have a very great career, I know, as a lawyer. Thank you.
Thank you. Let me just echo those same words about Sarah. I've had the opportunity to work extensively with her, and my office has worked extensively with Sarah, and she has always been such a constructive force in terms of moving the business of the agency forward and in trying to find ways in which we can best work together, and has always been such a friendly a presence on the ninth floor, someone who you can talk about the business of the agency, but also just talk about the happenings of our day together. And I always have appreciated the positive demeanor that you've brought and the professionalism that you've always conducted yourself with on the ninth floor. And you will be missed. And I certainly wish you all the best in your next step. The next item on the printed agenda was draft advisory opinion 2015-13, Senator Harry Reid. That has been withdrawn. Commissioner Hunter?
Thank you. Even though it's been withdrawn, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I'm delighted also to be able to work with you and the Vice Chair. I've enjoyed working with both of you in the past and look forward to a fresh start. Regarding the advisory opinion, I know it's been withdrawn. It's still on the agenda, so I just wanted to make comment on the letter that we received this morning from the requester, Mr. Mark Elias, about the Reid AO. 2 points. One, the letter characterizes the request as a routine advisory opinion request. I respectfully disagree. I don't think this was routine. The commenter note or the requester notes that a lot of the reliance for this was on the Carey AO, which, as we discussed in the last public meeting, that was an unusual AO. I think we can all agree on that, at least to the extent of the last part of the AO where it says, this AO is really just for this person. I don't have the exact sentence in front of me, but as I said at the last public meeting, I think that is contrary to the statute. I would definitely not have voted for that portion of the AO. With respect to the broader portion of Carey, I also think that that's a tenuous legal statement and probably wouldn't have voted for that at the time. However, I had come to the conclusion that I would have supported a yes draft in the Reid AO with some edits, which I'll mention in a minute, for the reason that I don't think in Mr. Elias's comment was that many people are relying on either the Carey AO or some version of it, and we have been permissive on personal use here at the Commission. I agree with all of that, and decided that it was probably best to go forward and say yes in this request, and if the Commission decided to change the rules in this regard, it'd be better to do via rulemaking, particularly if the Commission becomes more regulatory. So that's where I was headed. With respect to the edits to Draft A, my intention with those was to ensure that other former members of Congress who were similarly situated would also be able to avail themselves of the protection of the AO. So I didn't think that the fact that Senator Reid was the majority leader or that he had been there for a long time was the only reason that he should have been able to use these funds. That was a relevant factor with respect to how long he was going to be able to use them. And so he is different in that regard for being able to go beyond the 6 months. But I was willing to go forward and the opposite of the broad regulatory impulse that's stated in the letter. I just don't think that was not a fair characterization of the way that at least I was headed. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Hunter. The next item on the agenda is Draft Advisory Opinion 2015-14, Hillary for America. Mr. Elias is here, who is the requester, and Ms. Lopez. We have this is the second time that we've considered this matter, but there have been some late-breaking developments, so I will turn it over to Sean Wright and Bob Knopp to give us a presentation.
Thank you, Chairman Peterson, and good morning, Commissioners. Before you is Agenda Document 1569, which contains three responses to a advisory opinion request by Hillary for America. The request, as you know, asks whether DePaul University may provide a stipend and academic credit to a student who interned in the requester's compliance and vetting departments. Drafts A and B concluded that provision of a stipend is permissible under the Acting Commission regulations for the legal and compliance work that the student provided, but not for her other campaign work. The drafts also concluded that the provision of an academic credit is permissible for all of the student's work. Conversely, draft C concludes that the provision of a stipend and academic credit is permissible under the Acting Commission regulations for all of the student's work. The Commission received two comments on the request and two comments on the drafts. Thank you, and I'd be happy to address any questions you have.
All right. Thank you for that presentation, Mr. Wright. Are there any comments? Commissioner Weintraub.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Elias, you don't always persuade me when you come to the table with a request, but I thought you made a lot of good points at the last meeting, and I went back and looked at some of the old precedents that were being relied on in the initial drafts. And I was it's surprising that the question as you pose it has actually not been posed before. I'm always surprised when somebody comes up with something new that, I mean, student. There's nothing new about student internships, so it's surprising that nobody has ever brought us one like this before. But all of the previous iterations that have come before the commission have involved some sort of special program or a special scholarship fund and not a broad-based internship program like the one at issue here, where it's an accredited degree-granting institution. It's a 501c3. It's a they've got a broad-based internship program that's required for their students, and they have and students can apply for these stipends to help them with their living expenses while they are performing those internships. And this particular student happened to have a political internship, but the program isn't set up to do political internships. This is to allow her to accept it would put her on equal footing with all the other students who do non-political internships. And as I said, it's surprising, but nobody's ever posed that question to us before. And some of the old AOs, the very old AOs, were from the early days of the commission. When the commission first started up in the 70s, it was handling over 100 advisory opinion requests a year. So the responses were did not contain elaborate legal analyses in them. So some of those early ones are somewhat cursory in their analysis to begin with. But I think that there is not a lot of risk in to the system in saying yes to this request, and it would be, I think, beneficial, in fact, to do so. So working with OGC, my office came up with draft C, which does say yes. I think one way of looking at this would be to compare it to the situation of a better-off student from a more well-to-do family who wanted to do a political internship and for, you know, that didn't pay, an unpaid internship. And the family might say, well, you know, that's fine, honey. You go ahead and do that, and we'll pay your living expenses while you're doing that. We would never, in those circumstances, look at the family's payment of the intern's living expenses as a contribution to the campaign. And it seems to me that the school is doing effectively the same thing here. They are treating her like any other intern and providing her with a stipend, or offering to provide her with a stipend that would cover her living expenses. And it's totally independent of the fact that she happens to be doing a political internship. Their only concern is that it be of educational benefit, and they appear to have decided that it wouldn't satisfy their educational criteria. So I think you made some good arguments, and I went back and double-checked the law, and I think that that we could, without even overruling any of the old precedents, because the old AOs were not about this kind of a situation, I think we could say yes, and we should. I don't know if anybody else is ready to say yes, but I'm ready to say yes.
Thank you. Are there any other comments or questions for counsel? Commissioner Goodman.
I also thought that your presentation was persuasive at the last meeting, so I just want to let you know that the unique educational environment is of special interest to me, and the purpose for which these payments, these stipends are paid, is of interest. I also think that the unique First Amendment area of academic freedom is at play here. Without any, without this stipend program presenting any risk of corruption.
Right.
So I must apologize to you. I thought long and hard about your two advisory opinion requests over the break, and this is one where I started to move on from a no to a yes. I didn't think that there might be four votes of the commission. And just this week, it began to crystallize that there just might be four votes. But the thought and the thinking and the rationale for getting there is still in some flux. I note that the issues you raise are somewhat retrospective. I understand that the young lady is still awaiting a disposition of whether she can receive the money and that the campaign doesn't want to receive a corporate contribution. Given that we have another public meeting in 2 weeks, I don't want to jerk your chain, and I don't want to overpromise, but I think there is enough fluidity on the commission, I have learned in the past 2 days, and I want you to know I was here till 11 o'clock last night working on the draft that came from Commissioner Weintraub's office, so I'm working very hard for your client to see if we can get to a yes draft on this, and I am impressed, particularly by the educational purposes at issue here. So, with that, I will leave it to the chair to decide how best, in consultation with you, to proceed. But it may behoove the commission to take 2 more weeks on this.
Mr. Elias, do you have any comment or?
So, first, let me thank all of you. Congratulations on chairmanship. Congratulations on the vice chairmanship, and I want to thank you all. It's not often that one appears where there is seemingly consensus against you, and there at least has been some movement. So, of course, you know, if you need 2 more weeks, I think last time I said if you need 2 more weeks, just tell me what time you need. We'd rather you get this right. Hopefully, you'll think right is that the answer is yes. But either way, I think you're right. I think there are a number of interests here involving your point about the parents paying is a something that is, you know, you'd have to wrestle with a no. I think your point about academic freedom and the right of 501c3s to sort of pursue their mission, I think, is important. So, you know, we can perhaps work it out. I don't know how this is done, but we will consent to whatever time you need to hold this over.
Okay. Commissioner Hunter?
Thank you. With respect to draft C, I think it does make sense to try to say yes to this. And I actually have had several people ask me this question sort of over the years since I've been here.
What did you say?
I said no.
Okay.
I mean, because that's what the president says. Yeah. And so people have said sort of informally, you know, different colleges or, you know, people that I know that are interns, could we do this? And I say no. The president says no. So that was an easy answer, and I'm not sure that I'm at yes. I'm still thinking about it. But one of the things is, with respect to the legal analysis here, I'm not so sure that I could support it as written because it comes up with a completely new test. You know, it is compensation and it is for personal services, but now we look into whether it's for. You know, is the compensation for the campaign or is it for someone's educational benefit? And one of the issues that I'm thinking through on that is, so now the only person who can decide that it's for the student's educational benefit is the university. It can't be under this AO. It can't be, for example, I got a small stipend or whatever you want to call it in high school from a nonprofit organization that wasn't in the university. And so that person under this AO's analysis is not equipped to say that that money is for my educational benefit. And so I'm not sure that cabining in to just academic institutions makes sense, and B, is it a legally significant fact? Why are they the only ones that can decide? And so, along the lines of the thing that we were talking about before of, you know, making sure that disadvantaged students can do this, I know that some students prefer not to go through the credit route because then they have to pay the credits. I did this in college. I was an intern on the presidential campaign, got 6 credits for it, and had to pay for the 6 credits, which was expensive. And so the cheaper way of doing it, and a lot of my friends did it this way, is they didn't get the credits, and then you just go back to school the next semester and jam out as many credits as you can. So you can take 21 credits, at least when I was in college, for the same price that you could take 15. So it's cheaper that way, and so I don't think, you know, just saying this is the way we're going to make sure disadvantaged students can go is necessarily true. There's a lot of other ways to do it, but those are the, just so you know, the things that I'm still thinking about. Another question is, I saw this in a previous draft. It's not in this one, but the second program at DePauw allows students to do this for as few as, I think I saw, half a credit or something like that. Am I reading that right? It doesn't have to be, you know, the full semester.
The programs are actually separate. So the grant program, you don't have to be getting credit to get the grant.
Okay.
So it's not, and you'll see if the very first request, we lay it out, I think, in the most clear manner. But the extended studies credit, one way to do it is an internship. And once you've gotten it, you apply through that and get the credit. But it's not necessary that you're an extended studies credit recipient to apply to the grant program. Does that make sense?
I'll have to go back and read it.
Okay.
With that in mind.
Grant program supports the extended studies credit in the sense that you can get the money while getting that credit,
right,
but it's
okay.
Not necessary.
So do you have to, does the extended studies program, do you have to do this sort of like intensive study, take the semester off of college and do it, or could you still be on campus and take, you know, a 1 hour or half a credit?
There are other ways to do it. It doesn't have to be an internship. It can be.
Okay. What could it be besides an internship?
I'd have to look back deeper into that program. But I think it's, the idea is that it's some sort of hands-on learning experience.
Okay.
But I think maybe a clinical program at the school or something like that would probably also be acceptable.
You could go work for a campaign. You know, say your university was in a target state. You could go, you know, do some kind of hands-on program for half a credit or 1 credit, you know, sort of getting out the vote, for example.
Sure. I think so, yes.
Okay. Assuming it met the criteria of...
Which criteria?
Whatever the university, you know, gives 1 credit or 1 half credit for.
Right, half a credit, right.
Yeah, in other words, we can check and see whether DePauw offers half-credit classes as opposed to one. I know that different universities have different rules about what the minimum unit of...
But it wouldn't matter under this AO.
I don't think it would matter legally.
Yeah, it wouldn't matter.
I was just trying to answer like as a factual matter.
Right.
Like I don't know legally it matters, but...
Do you think it matters legally that this is only for academic institutions? Is that something that should matter under the legal analysis?
So I'm going to confess something that is akin to what I think Commissioner Goodman was confessing, which is, you know, I last hearing, I started with, you know, it appeared we were at 6 no's. Yesterday it appeared, well, perhaps there is some movement on this, but it was less transparent to me that there was as much potential movement as there is, so that, or not.
I'm mirroring what I
heard Commissioner Goodman say.
I'm in the zone.
Yeah, right. So the truth is, one of the benefits of giving you all a couple of weeks is it will let me also think further about. Yeah, when you file a request and you get back drafts that say no, you know, you're in a different frame of mind. So
I'm looking past you. Sorry, Peterson.
Not a problem, Commissioner Hunter.
a separate sort of line of questioning and one different idea that's a different approach than draft C is just to say, well, we're going to essentially overrule parts of the previous AOs and say that a stipend is not compensation. And, you know, I don't know if you'll yell at us for doing that because you want us to follow the precedent in other areas, but this would be at least more deregulatory. And I think, as I said earlier, that is more, in my mind, that's easier to do because you're going in a more deregulatory position. But that's another potential. I don't know if you've had a chance to think about that because it wasn't on the table, but saying that a stipend is not compensation.
Look, I think that Commissioner Weintraub makes a a point about whether or not you have to overrule those earlier precedent. I think our original request suggested that you should overrule the earlier precedent.
Right.
So I haven't looked. I haven't gone back and looked to see, in light of draft C, whether there is a way to thread those needles. I mean, I don't want to. When you look at those early precedent, I think I said this last time, they are, I mean, literally, like, physically look at them. There is a dearth of analysis, and frankly, I don't think the commission, I think there are precedent where if you all were on the commission, you might or might not have come out the way that a prior precedent, right? We had that conversation about the Kerry AO, for
Correct.
Example. I think the precedent that are at issue here, even if you had come out the same way, you would never have written it the same way. Like, it's like they're just from, like, another era of the agency and another era of campaigns and, frankly, another era of higher education. And your question about other nonprofit organizations, I mean, just, like, none of that is contemplated in sort of a meaningful way to the current campaign finance system. So I guess, if you ask me, I am less attached to those precedent but if the commission feels it's important to affirm them in some form or fashion, then you know, my goal is to get to a yes. But my initial take on it was that those precedent probably just should go by the wayside.
And I, at this moment, which again could change, I tend to agree with you, and I realize that's the way you structured the request in the first instance. I certainly don't want to speak for anybody, but my recollection of some of what was said last public meeting was that people were more interested in cabining it in. And after I've read this one, I'm not so sure that that's the right way of going. But doing it that way may again, don't want to speak for anybody, but may lose support for a different reason.
Right, although we can always get yeses. Like, we can get six yeses in gradations of yes. I
you haven't heard from every commissioner yet.
More precisely, four yeses. I haven't heard from four commissioners. So I hope if there's not an agreement on the reason for yes, we could still get this student, you know, to a good place. But I hear you. There's a lot of fluidity to this, and I think whether it is useful at all times or not, I will leave to each of you your own judgments, but we tend to generate a fair amount of paper around these things, so I can assure you we will also take what we're hearing the feedback from today is and try to give you further thoughts in advance of your own consideration of this in a couple of weeks.
Thanks.
Or I shouldn't say a couple of weeks. I don't know when it will be scheduled, but for whatever.
Okay. Commissioner Weintraub.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm going to make a point that I've made in other contexts, which is we have a particular AO request in front of us. If some nonprofit group that wants to offer a stipend wants to come in and describe their program and ask for an AO request, they're free to do so. But this is not a rulemaking. It's an AO. Speaking for myself, there are a variety of facts that are represented in this AO request that are significant to me. I don't know that I would be – I'm happy and welcome the opportunity to work with my colleagues, because I think the A plan would be that we could get four or more commissioners on the same rationale, and then we could give some actual guidance, which would be nice. But I'm not I would have more concerns about saying, well, you know, any nonprofit organization that sets up a program of political internships and wants to fund them, we're going to say that's fine, because I could well imagine a 501c4 organization that springs up around an election. We're starting to see this more and more, and seems to have the sole purpose of promoting a particular candidate, and they decide that one of their nonprofit activities is going to be they're going to sponsor a political internship, and they are going to provide stipends and salaries for people who want to do political work explicitly on campaigns. And, oh, looky, looky, it just turns out that everyone who applies and gets their political internship is going to work in the offices of one particular candidate. And all of that is being supported by undisclosed dollars. I would have concerns about that. So I would not be in interested in writing a rationale that would open the door to that. But I think we have a lot more protections when we are talking about a university that has a broad-based internship program. In this fact pattern, I don't see any risks of any problems, but I could envision other problems where people are basically providing paid labor to campaigns that would cause concern for me.
Would you, Mr. Hunter? Thank you. Would you have a concern if it came to be that a university who, you know, had the nonpartisan kind of process that we've discussed here today ended up sending all of their interns to the Ted Cruz campaign? And we didn't know where any of the money that was sent to that university came from. Would you have any concerns then?
I think if it looked like this, if it was a, you know, accredited degree-granting institution, I mean, I'm sure there are some accredited degree-granting institutions that attract a more conservative student base and some that attract a more liberal student base, and that's
so the fact that they're accredited takes away your concern?
That's an important factor to me in this scenario. I'm not saying that I would say no necessarily to all other requests. I just think we ought to take them as they come.
Right. And I understand what you're saying, but as we've discussed, I think we have a different view of this provision of the statute about advisory opinions, because I think that we have to determine what's materially significant. And so if it's significant to you that it's a accreditation, that it's a, that this program is done through an accredited university, then obviously you're free to say that. But I don't know that that's legally significant, and therefore other people should be able to rely on it if they're 501c whatevers and they're not in universities, because I'm not sure that that's a legally significant fact.
Well, but they would not be. You know, we've got the boilerplate at the back of all of our
right.
AOs that say this response constitutes an advisory opinion concerning the application of the Act and Commission regulations to the specific transaction or activity set forth in your request. The Commission emphasizes that if there is a change in any of the facts or assumptions presented, and such facts or assumptions are material to a conclusion presented in this advisory opinion, then the requester may not rely on that conclusion as support for its proposed activity. Any person involved in any specific transaction or activity which is indistinguishable in all its material aspects from the transaction or activity with respect to which this advisory opinion is rendered may rely on this advisory opinion.
Right. I understand. But what I'm saying is that
if you're, you know, going to say, well, other people who present different facts can also rely on this even though they're transaction is not the same as this, I don't think that's the law.
Right, but you would put the accreditation portion in the legal analysis. And so you're right. Other people wouldn't be able to rely on that opinion if they were in an accredited institution. I may not do so. And so other people would be able to rely on a decision that we pass. So
we should do a rulemaking.
Well, no, I don't. I mean, maybe we should, but that's not at play in this discussion at all. If I don't think it's legally significant that it's an accredited institution, then that's not going to be in the legal analysis of this AO, and therefore other people can rely on it.
Commissioner Ravel.
Thank you. Well, I think we should spend some time talking about, you know, how we can reach yes that we all agree on, but this discussion is helpful. I have to say that not only I was at no, a fairly strong no. And then thank you for your not only your presentation, but also the points that you made and the points that you've made in the letter that set forth some of the factors that do cabin this issue in for me. And so I have to say that I concur. Generally, I'm not in total agreement with draft C. However, I concur with the analysis that it must relate to an accredited institution. It must be a stipend that is intended for all students. All of the factors, and I can read them all, but all of the factors that Mr. Elias set forth in his request, because those are meaningful. And going back to look at the previous AOs, the reasoning, as he pointed out, is either dicta or weak. But I am in agreement that with respect to a student, both legally And also, just from a policy basis, there seems to be an appropriate concept of making an exception in this case. But I would not want to extend it out to other nonprofits because, as we know, that opens up the universe in a way that is not one before us, as Commissioner Weintraub pointed out, but also is not something that I could support because it would not be, it would eviscerate the rules relating to corporate contributions.
What, I'm sorry,
It would eviscerate the rules relating to corporate contributions, and that would be inappropriate, in my view.
What? But educational institutions are also corporations.
I understand,
okay.
And I think in this circumstance, and you know, you had the conversation about whether or not the previous AOs should be overruled or withdrawn or for anything else. I am open to either of those approaches, actually, but I definitely would want to cabinet in.
Some corporations are okay, and others might not be.
Well,
I think this is helpful to air these. You can tell we haven't had a chance to air these since, because this is late developing thought among the commission, and I think it's helpful for you to hear it too. If you are going to submit, and I'll leave it to you because I don't want to spend your clients' money unnecessarily, but if you are going to submit something, it would be helpful to receive it probably by next Wednesday.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's why I said it is helpful to get you this in advance of.
So just so that you have some thoughts to conjure and shoot for, you know. To me, in this discussion, the linchpin legal principle is not that it is an accredited university or that it is a stipend. It is that the purpose for the stipend is a bona fide educational purpose. And what is the evidence that it is a bona fide educational purpose? We have an accredited university. We have a bona fide student-university relationship. We have a long-standing, not that it has to be long-standing, but stipend program. We have an extended studies program that requires those are all evidence that it is bona fide, as opposed to a run-of-the-mill, a mill to just fund campaign interns for one side of the fence. I might also add, though, that risk is somewhat cabined by IRS precedent, and these, particularly the Campaign Academy case, which you didn't cite in your materials, but I think is relevant here. C3s cannot run a mill to train people for just one side of the fence. The IRS has determined, and the tax court has held, that is personal benefit or private benefit to one party. So for all those reasons, I'm not that concerned about someone other than a university doing this. This one happens to be a university. So to me, the fact that it's accredited and all that is relevant, but relevant to what I find is a broader legal principle, and that is the bona fide educational purpose. So that may help you. I'm also interested in harmonizing, to some extent, the historical, because I agree, I read the historical opinions, and there is no analysis. It's rote.
Right.
Right? You paid for somebody who worked intern for a campaign, ergo, it's a corporate contribution. And there's no analysis behind those simple statements in Koenig or the NYU case or the Vanderbilt case. So when you look under the hood of that analysis, you also find several inconsistencies through the 35 years of precedent. And one is, why is it that in-kind credit has not been treated, but the stipend that allows you to do something toward credit would be? The inconsistency that a stipend that allows you to take a summer to go do this and have your subsistence paid treat students differently who may be on scholarship at school having their subsistence paid by somebody else while they volunteer for a local federal campaign. Why do we allow one subsidy but not the other? Why is it that we discriminate among students who work for nonprofit causes and non-political activities versus those who choose a political nonprofit? Those are all of interest to me if you are going to submit something further. And to me, the bona fide educational purpose resolves all of those. So long as I see the overriding educational purpose evidenced by the accreditation, evidenced by the ongoing student relationship, evidenced by those things, then when the next case comes to me, I know that the question is there a bona fide educational purpose and program here, as opposed to just a mill to provide people internships, and I can look for indicia of bona fide educational purpose, and this would be the first one that we let out of the barn to say so. So, and by the way, this is one commissioner's thinking, but to the extent you're trying to harmonize, that is one possible way.
Right. So, if I can just address two of those points, which I think are really
yes, could you react? I'll ask you a question.
Resonate.
Could you react?
Thank
to that?
You. Which resonate a lot. The first is. So there's that line of AOs that like the CompuServe AO about like whether
which one
CompuServe whether CompuServe, I think it was CompuServe, could give free email accounts to campaigns. This was back when one had to pay for email accounts. It was from the early 90s or late 80s, and basically what the law that came out of that sort of line is that you can't treat campaigns better, but you don't have to treat them worse. Right, there's like there's all of these cases like involving like hotel discounts
Hyatt.
Or frequent Hyatt,
Hyatt.
Like there's all these. So when I first looked at this question, and I didn't know about these old AOs, I didn't know about the old AOs. I was actually shocked because I was like, I don't understand. As long as they're not discriminating between political and non-political, this is like a narrow little area where we are actually saying no, you actually have to treat campaigns worse. Whereas Hyatt. With hotel points and discounts, doesn't have to treat them worse. So, doesn't have to treat them worse. So, I think there's a harmonization there that is kind of nettlesome here because it's not clear why we have picked out this group of people, students that they don't get that benefit, but Hyatt does. So that's one thing. The second is that something you said, Commissioner, actually resonates with something Commissioner Weintraub started with, which is that if you don't walk back to some extent, whether it's harmonized, whether it's overruled, I'll leave to you all, you do wind up in this odd thing where the university is actually paying some students to be doing interns, as you point out, and people's parents are providing stipends for people to do, right? The rich family, their parents are providing essentially the subsidy.
Or private foundations and other scholarships.
Or private foundations and other scholarships, or banks, federally chartered banks, right? Like, in some ways, it proves too much, the old line of authority, because if in fact the payment of someone's living expenses to do a stint on a campaign is a contribution, well then, geez, we need to be looking. Every campaign needs to be looking at: are these people working on the campaign? Forget about internships. Are the people working on the campaign? Are their parents supporting them? Are their boyfriend or girlfriend supporting them? Have they taken out a loan to support them? Is Visa like? Are they not paying their credit card bill? Your point about harmonization, I think, actually goes to a point that I think Commissioner Weintraub was making about this, where you do have this oddity that you would have to figure out what is the personal funds issue, if any, if you follow those old opinions. So I know you made a couple of other points, and we'll address those as well. But I think you're right that this kind of doesn't hold together.
Are there any other questions or comments? The only one that I have is it follows up on something that Commissioner Hunter brought up, which is, and first of all, let me thank Commissioner Weintraub for getting a draft out there that I think moves the ball forward and gives us a vehicle now to try to find compromise. And I certainly think that this has been helpful here. I think the conversations we've had so far have been helpful, and I hope that we can find a way that we can land this. The draft draft C says that the stipend is compensation and that there are personal services being provided to the campaign, but that the compensation is not for those personal services, but that it's rather a compensation for maintaining the blog or doing the sorts of activities that I think that there was some mention of there were some academic, I don't know if it was papers or presentations that were associated with receiving the stipend.
Those requirements are associated with the extended studies credit.
Okay. Oh, okay.
Not with the stipend. The idea with the stipend is that it's just to support these basic living expenses and not even cover them. Like, if you'll notice on her expenses, they were like $4,700 and she's getting $3,000. So I think that's the point that Jeff C. tries to make with respect to that.
One of the issues that Commissioner Hunter brought up that I've been puzzling over myself is whether or not we should even be calling it compensation. Does calling it compensation, I don't know if this is a question that you would know offhand. Does that have implications? Your client's not the university, but rather the campaign. But does that have implications for the university?
It has implications for the university and for
to say that it's compensation
as a tax. It would make it taxable in these stipends. I mean, I'm not representing the individual nor the university, and I'm not a tax lawyer. But with all of that, I think it also has it would have significant tax implications.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay.
About whether it's taxable income. I don't think it is compensation.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think. I think there is a reason why the IRS has rules around stipends that distinguish it from compensation.
And that's just one of the issues that I'm just kind of noodling over right now is should we be calling this compensation at all, or should we stay kind of in the framework that the draft C has, where we say that it's not compensation for the personal services? Because when you think of compensation, that means payment for services rendered to a certain individual or entity, and there isn't anything, there's not work that's being performed by the recipient of the stipend here. So it's not that they are, I mean, they're furthering their academic career. They're not really being, it's not like this is an intern for a professor who's doing research and is being compensated for those research activities on behalf of a professor. And so I'm just wondering if even maybe the cleaner shot, that at least as I'm thinking through it, and I may be persuaded otherwise, but something that you might also, to the extent that you have additional thoughts on, is the cleaner analytical approach to just say, if we were to approve this, to say that this just isn't compensation?
Yeah, I mean, also, by the way, wage and hour laws, right?
Yeah.
Like, if this was compensation, then unless it was, you'd have the exempt, non-exempt employee issue, you'd have withholding tax issues, you'd have minimum wage. And I think that this, again, we can look into this and give a little more meat to this. But I think it's not, I believe it's actually not treated as compensation.
Okay. All right. Is there any other discussion or any questions? If not, I think the plan will be then to resume discussion on this in 2 weeks at our next open meeting. And I certainly appreciate the comments that you've given us so far, and also the opportunity to allow us to continue to discuss and figure out a way potentially to go forward on this. So if there's no other discussion, we'll just say that we look forward to the additional materials that you provide.
Again, I want to thank you all for taking this seriously. Commissioner Weintraub, thank you for rescuing this with a draft. And commissioners, thank you all for your time and attention.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Elias and Ms. Lopez. We'll move then to the next matter on the agenda, which is Draft Advisory Opinion 2015-15, WeSupportThat.com, which has been submitted by Dan Brady, whom I understand is on the line and can participate with us remotely.
Yes, I believe he is. Mr. Brady?
I'm here. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Good morning, Mr. Brady. Glad that you could join us. We have a presentation by Mr. Nevin Stepanovic from the Office of General Counsel, assisted ably by Sean Wright and Amy Rothstein. And when ready, please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and good morning, Commissioners. Agenda document number 16-03-A, response to a request for advisory opinion filed on behalf of WeSupportThat.com, a for-profit corporation that proposes to offer an internet-based service through which individual users will be able to make contributions in response to certain actions of federal candidates. Specifically, The requester's website will enable a user to search for candidates or office holders' actions, such as public statements, legislative votes, and sponsorship of particular legislation, make contributions to candidates whose actions the user supports, and send messages to candidates explaining why the user made the contribution. We Support That asks whether its proposal is permissible and whether the service fees paid to it by its users will be treated as contributions to these recipient political committees. The draft before you concludes that a requester's proposal is permissible and that the service fees paid to it would not be contributions. The Commission received no comments on the advisory opinion request or the draft. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Stepanovic. Are there any questions or comments with respect to the draft? Mr. Brady, since you took the trouble to call in, are there any comments that you have with respect to the draft that's before us?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, clearly we support the draft as it's presented. We think it dovetails nicely with the AOs that have come down and the subjects of technology, the interface of technology and campaign finance. Obviously, it's an evolving field, but we spent a fair amount of time really tried to use the most recent AOs as a guide to crafting the business model, and we think we've done that. So, again, appreciate the time today.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Brady. Mr. Vice Chairman, do we have a motion?
I move to approve agenda document 16-03-A, which is draft A, and authorize the Office of General Counsel to make any technical and conforming edits that may be necessary.
We have a motion on the table. All those in favor say aye.
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 Madam Secretary, the vote is unanimous, 6-0. Thank you, Mr. Stepanovic. The next item on our agenda is Audit Division Recommendation Memorandum on the Utah State Democratic Committee, which is Audit 13-10. We'll have a presentation from Ms. Paula Nerthen and Mr. Douglas Kodish. And when ready, please proceed.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and Commissioners. Before you is the Audit Division Recommendation Memorandum on Utah State Democratic Committee, which recommends approval of five findings. Finding one, misstatement of financial activity. Finding two, record keeping for employees. Finding three, improper bank account structure. Finding four, receipt of Levin Fund donations that exceed the limit. Finding five, receipt of contributions that exceed the limit. These findings were presented at the exit conference and included in the audit staff's interim and draft audit reports. USDC provided a response to the audit reports but did not request an audit hearing concerning these matters. We're prepared to answer any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Nerthen. Are there any questions or comments with respect to this audit? Commissioner Goodman.
Yes. I'm a little confused about the misstatement of financial activity finding, and I just want to understand the facts. I mean, I think I get that the result was that the bank ledger didn't line up with the report figures. So I just want to understand how that happened. It may not have consequence for approving the audit report, but it may inform a decision later on if there were a referral. As I understand what occurred, because they had the sweep account, and maybe it wasn't because of the sweep account, the federal committee recorded and reported to the commission receipt of approximately, was it about $90,000 in transfers from the state committee?
That's correct.
Because they thought those transfers were occurring. But in fact, the transfers were not made to the federal account.
That's
Am I right so far?
That's correct.
And that caused a $90,000 overstatement of cash on hand in the federal account.
That's correct.
Okay. Well, so, yes, sir.
I just wanted to clarify something, and what you said, and she agreed to, was that it wasn't that they thought what they did think was that there was no reason really to allow the funds to make a physical transfer in this case, mm-hmm. because If they did, the monies would get swept back into the parent account from which they originated.
Okay. I see. So that they weren't really in the habit of making actual physical transfers, like a check or I would do it online now, but transfer money from one account to the next because it was in one account.
They actually did make some transfers, and then they the order of it, Paula may know, but they did make some transfers. I believe they made five transfers, and then five they didn't make transfers, where they actually physically...
So they failed to physically make the transfer to the federal account. They thought they... apparently thought that they had, or somebody thought they had, the treasurer, because the treasurer reported these five transfers totaling plus or minus $90,000.
Right.
Okay. And so what we think happened is the $90,000 remained in the state account. I mean, it didn't go poof. And it got spent by the state account, apparently. I mean, if the money, I'm asking kind of what would have happened to the money. The money would have stayed in the state account and been spent by the state account, right?
It would have. The money was actually, it's kind of difficult to separate here, but the account was a parent account or a common account that was shared by both the federal and the non-federal
right.
funds.
Excuse me, I understand.
Yeah.
I'm speaking about accounts, and you're telling me they're, don't think of these as two bank accounts. Okay.
Right, but they were separated.
The money stayed and was used by, stayed for the benefit of and was used by the state committee.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
I take it that the Utah Democratic Committee reported all funds to the state account and all disbursements to the state of Utah?
Yes.
They report that?
Mm-hmm.
So we don't have failure to disclose donors here. We've got an accounting glitch, essentially.
Correct.
That resulted in a misstatement of $90,000 on the FEC reports.
Right. It's shown on the FEC reports.
Okay. Thank you.
All right.
Thank you.
Are there any other questions or comments?
Can you make a motion?
Commissioner,
in the Audit Division Recommendation Memorandum on the Utah State Democratic Committee, A13-10, I move to approve the recommendations for findings 1, 3, 4, and 5 as set forth in Agenda Document 16-02-A, and approve the recommendation for finding 2, record keeping for employees, as set forth in Agenda Document 16-02-A, subject to an amendment to include $99,431.97 paid to contract workers.
Thank you. Just to clarify, this will be the first of two motions, as I understand it.
It's the only motion I have here.
Oh.
Yes. Okay. I see heads nodding for those who are listening. Okay. We have a motion on the table. All those in favor say aye.
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 Those opposed? No.
No.
Madam Secretary, that vote fails by a vote of 3-3 with... Commissioners Ravel, Weintraub, and the Vice Chairman in favor, and Commissioners Goodman, Hunter, and myself opposed. Commissioner Weintraub.
And just for those who might be listening and have no idea what's going on here, this is sort of a long-running issue for some of us that when we do these audits, these state committees often have independent contractors that work for them and perform various functions that might otherwise be performed by their regular employees. And those of us, three of us, believe that the contract workers should be covered by the record-keeping requirements. So that's why we continue to make these motions about contract workers.
That's a helpful clarification for those who are out there listening to this meeting. Vice Chairman Walther, do we have another motion?
Where's the secondary motion? I'm not sure. In Audit Division Recommendation Memorandum on the Utah State Democratic Committee, A13-10, I move to approve the recommendations for findings 1, 3, 4, and 5 as set forth in Agenda Document 16-02-A.
Mr. Chairman.
Commissioner Goodman.
I'd like to propose an amendment to the pending motion, and that is an edit to the final report everywhere, the edit being everywhere there is a title to the finding four, that the title be amended from receipt of Levin Fund donations that exceed the limit to receipt of Levin Fund donations that do not exceed the limit. And the reason for the, speaking to the motion to amend, the reason for the amendment is because on page two of the memorandum given to us by audit staff, they conclude, in response to the DFAR, the committee stated that it used the last in, first out accounting method and provided the accounting documentation requested by the audit staff. The audit staff verified that the committee's Levin accounting, verified the committee's Levin accounting and determined that the committee did not exceed the Levin Fund donation limit. The audit staff recommends the commission find that the committee did not exceed the Levin Fund limit. And so all I'm asking for is a clarification in the title of findings that wouldn't mislead that there was there were excessive contributions and that the titles reflect what we're actually finding.
Could I
Commissioner Weintraub.
Perhaps a friendly amendment to the friendly amendment. I didn't know this issue was going to be raised, so I would want to take a closer look at that section of the audit report and perhaps talk to our auditors about it, but perhaps we could just call it receipt of Levin Fund donation.
I think that would be fine. And so I will amend my I will accept that as an amendment to my motion, to Commissioner Walther's motion. I believe we've exhausted under Robert's rules our ability to amend pending motions in the but Commissioner Walther, if you will accept that amendment to your main motion, I think we can just proceed.
Yeah, I accept that motion. That's fine, as long as we're...
Madam Secretary, if I could summarize, everywhere that there is a title to finding four, we would change the title to just say receipt of Levin Fund donation.
And as I understand it, that it would be in the final audit report. Am I correct?
Yes, in the document before us and in the final approved audit report.
Not sure that
that's before us.
That the document before you is the document before you, so I think the edit would be incorporated into the
proposed final audit
into the proposed final audit report.
Yeah.
Not the current document before you.
Oh, right. The document before me is the document before me.
Correct.
Yes. So could you state that for the secretary to help us clarify?
Right. So the proposed edit by the commissioners would be adopted into the proposed final audit report.
Thank you.
Right. And just for a matter of clarification, the vice chairman's motion does not include finding two, and I'm assuming that with that not being included within this motion, that the intention is that would then get kicked to additional issues.
Yeah, as always.
Yeah, I just for you know the benefit of the auditors
right.
and everyone here, just to make sure that's kind of the understanding of the commission with respect to your motion.
Well, no.
Oh, is it not?
Well, there's correct me if I'm wrong, but I think part of finding two we agree on. I mean, we would expand finding two to cover more the contract workers, but there is an existing recommendation for the employees that we all agree are covered that they fail to maintain monthly payroll logs to document $62,000 worth of time. Okay. So I think we want to agree on that.
Okay. So okay. I just when it wasn't included in the motion, I wasn't quite sure what the intention was. So if
I don't know whether we could have more amendments to the motion, but we could.
Hey, I think it's working so far, so I wouldn't mind another one. So.
If Commissioner Walther will accept my prior one, then we can start a whole new round of amendments to the main motion.
Well, let's say do you want to accept all of finding two? This point,
I prefer to support that.
Then I could just remove. I could move again.
Just incorporate
just
finding two in there.
And so, without having to go through the rigmarole, should we just include finding two as part of the motion?
That's
as I understand it, the motion would be then to approve findings 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5, subject to, in the proposed final audit report, changing the title for finding 4 to just receipt of Levin funds.
Very good.
Okay. Okay. Thank
you. Do you see that, Ron?
Mr. Kodish?
Yeah, I'm sorry. Receipt of Levin fund donations, is that the title?
Yes. Yeah.
Sorry.
That's correct.
Thank you.
All right. Are we ready to move to the vote? We have a motion on the table after that little bit of a ping-pong match, but I think we're in a better spot now. All those in favor, say aye.
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 Aye. Madam Secretary, that motion passes by a vote of 6-0. That concludes the agenda for this meeting. Mr. Staff Director, do we have any management or administrative matters that need to be discussed?
Mr. Chairman, we have no such matters.
This meeting is adjourned.